Willow Valley Communities recognizes the need for a national conversation about the Vietnam War and is proud to support the efforts to preserve the memories of those who lived through it. More information is available at willowvalleycommunities.org. The law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein and Lehr, who are proud to partner with WITF in preserving our history to enable future generations to explore the past, understand the present, and create the future. Saul Ewing is online at saul.com.
Funding for Smart Talk is provided by Capital Blue Cross, providing healthcare coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. Serving the community for over 75 years, Capital Blue Cross is behind you for whatever lies ahead. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by Pinnacle Health, bringing quality care to your community through Harrisburg, Community General Osteopathic, and West Shore Hospitals. More information on our locations is available at pinnaclehealth.org.
Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Ken Burns' epic documentary, The Vietnam War, premieres this Sunday on WITF-TV and PBS. Over the next few days, we'll look at several aspects of the Vietnam era. In the late 1960s and early 70s, the war in Vietnam tore this country apart. There were protests on college campuses and at government buildings everywhere against what many felt was an unjust war. Many of the demonstrations became violent. When some anti-war activists saw that street protests or acts of civil disobedience didn't work, they began taking the law into their own hands to make a point and try to stop the war. They were called radicals at the time. These radicals were involved in bombings and other serious crimes. In 1970, an alleged plot to bomb steam tunnels in Washington, D.C., and kidnap presidential advisor and Secretary of State Henry Kissinger was uncovered. The trial of the Harrisburg Seven took place at the Federal Building in Harrisburg in 1972. Our guest today has written a book about the Harrisburg Seven. Is William O'Rourke, author of The Harrisburg Seven and the New Catholic Left. Mr. O'Rourke, welcome to the program.
Yes, happy to be here.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. As part of WITF's ongoing effort to share the history of our region, the Vietnam War WITF Stories provides an in-depth multimedia look at how the Vietnam War impacted the people of South Central Pennsylvania. Visit our website, vietnam.witf.org. All right, so I kind of provided a thumbnail sketch of the Harrisburg Seven, but if you would, provide a few more details. Who were the Harrisburg Seven, and what were they accused of doing?
Well, the Harrisburg Seven were, actually a transitional group. In your introduction, you highlighted the violence that was starting up, especially in the early 70s, in the anti-war movement. The Harrisburg Seven consisted of six Catholics, some priests and nuns, and one Muslim Pakistani. They had been peaceful demonstrators. Philip Berrigan was a priest and most famous for being part of the Catonsville Nine, which was a mostly peaceable demonstration and very effective. But at the time of The plot was announced, you have to remember, by J. Edgar Hoover in order to get more money for the FBI. So the Hoover's other instinct was to get rid of the peaceful reputation of these priests and nuns were being a headache to him. And they had a informer in Lewisburg Penitentiary, who where Philip Berrigan was residing because of the Catonsville Nine, and that informer copied letters that were going in and out from Elizabeth McAllister, a nun at the time, detailing conversations that were held about how the peace movement could be advanced. One of the conversations had to do with kidnapping somebody famous. In this case, kidnapping the particular person mentioned was Henry Kissinger, who was a large figure in government at the time. But again, Hoover's intention was to get rid of the peace side of the protesters. It's much easier to criminalize and attack violent protesters. And the by staging this trial and playing up the bombing of the heating tunnels business, which never was going to take place, even though they did scout out tunnels, two of the defendants, none of the two priests, Philip Berrigan and Joe Winderoth, went into the D.C. tunnels. But the Catholic left itself was torn between the more Gandhi side of the peace movement and the more violent side at that time represented by the Inchoate SDS and the Weathermen who were starting up.
So just to clarify, where was the new Catholic left, including Philip Berrigan, were they seriously planning to kidnap Kissinger or seriously thinking about bombing or these tunnels in Washington? Or was this just something that, you know, was part of the conversation of what could happen? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, was there an actual conspiracy?
Yes, there was a tiny bit of conspiracy in the sense that they did go into the tunnels, they meaning Joe Winderoth and Philip Berrigan. But the odd thing about that is the FBI is good at agent provocateurs, and Boyd Douglas, who is the informer who was in prison with Philip Berrigan, the Berrigan himself, while he was in prison, became more interested in, you know, perhaps advancing the cause through some act of violence. The difficulty there is that in some ways he was turning into the most ordinary kind of prison, because as a lot of studies have shown, is if you, you know, throw people into prison for long periods of time, they actually become more criminal or more violent rather than less. And so I think Philip, who of that crowd was the only one, well, Dan Berrigan, but he was an unindicted conspirator. Of that crowd, Philip was the one who was really spending the most time in prison, and I do think they had an effect on him. But the it was a hung jury, as you may or may not remember, in that trial, and the 10-2, and the 10 people really didn't believe that the tunnel business was an overt act, high enough to bring a guilty verdict in any of the conspiracy charges.
Just to bring some context into this, the reason that the trial was held in Harrisburg is because Middle District of Pennsylvania, where Lewisburg Federal Penitentiary is located, correct?
Right. They also wanted it held in Harrisburg because in that district, because the government, the prosecutors assumed that the jury pool would be much more conservative than if it was held where the letters were written, which was the instigation of the whole plot, was the fact that they had these letters that went in and out. And they could have held the trial in the New York district, but they obviously wanted to pick Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania, in order to get a more agreeable jury pool, which oddly, in the end, they really didn't. The Harrisburg trial was also marked by the first time Jay Shulman was a sociologist who did jury background, and he is actually the man who started the whole enterprise, where now it's a big going business where people who can afford it hire people to do in-depth studies on the potential jury pools in any trial that goes on and is, you know, either notorious or costly.
And that was, again, just to kind of repeat that point, that the very first time that was used. So you mentioned Boyd Douglas, and he's kind of a linchpin to the charges coming down. Who was Boyd Douglas? And talk a little bit about him going into Lewisburg, the town itself, and Bucknell University, and what he tried to do.
Yes, it's funny because one of the attorneys for the defense was Ramsey Clark, the former attorney general. And Ramsey Clark, when he was attorney general under LBJ, instigated this work release program as a kind of liberal way to reform the prison experience. Meaning, and besides work release, they had also study release. So Boyd, who was a longtime con man, he was in some ways a typical American figure insofar he was a hustler. He was had a kind of a criminal background. He used to steal cars. I mean, he started early. But nonetheless, he got himself into a study release program because he had some charm, charm enough to lure Philip Berrigan into trusting him. He became a student at Bucknell. And that allowed him to go in and out of the prison, and that also allowed him to receive the letters, copy them, you know, take them, mail Philip Berrigan's letters to Elizabeth, because though he copied those and gave them to the FBI before Elizabeth McAllister got them, because the, you know, he was outside of the confines of the prison and he could put those letters in the mailbox, because otherwise, of course, any letters that would have gone out of the prison would have been looked at before they, you know, had been mailed.
You know, I think that, you know, for those who live, of us who lived through it, we still have memories of this, but it has been a long time, well over 40 years, about 45 years. So it's probably wise to remind people what the country was like at that point. How would you describe the mood of the nation at that point in 1970s, 1972?
Well, it was incendiary insofar as the Vietnam War was, as many people have noted, the first war to really be on television every night. And television had come into the world, into American households in ways that it never had. The Korean War, even though there was very vague similarities, wasn't reported the way the Vietnam War was reported. And the because of the draft, war affected everybody, meaning anyone was, you know, liable for the draft, and so it cut across economic and social lines throughout the United States, affected everyone because they all, you know, either if you were a young male, you were susceptible, but obviously there were families and everything else. So everybody was involved in the war, unlike today, where the military, which always did want a volunteer army, only 1% of the population is actively engaged, whereas back then the percentage, as I say, was ubiquitous. Everybody was felt by it. And anyway, the war went on, and a lot of people couldn't understand what was going on in Vietnam in terms of why we were there. There are a lot of reasons, and I suppose the Ken Burns documentary is going to try to point them out as he sees them.
Go but way no, back into the 1940s, in fact.
Yeah, no, it's the difference with Vietnam was that it was on television, and television was just beginning to exercise the great power that it still has. And nonetheless, demonstrations became a new version of, you know, speaking of Ken Burns again, you know, his famous documentary on the Civil War. It was a civil war in the sense that people began to protest it. But the earliest protests tended to be peaceful. But by 68, 69, they were not peaceful anymore. And the government, you know, the killing at Kent State, where the National Guard, you know, shot some students, killed one of them. It became a real appalling thing that Americans would have to take in every night, partly because this was in some ways not brand new, obviously, because of history, but it was brand new for that generation and for the parents and the families who were watching this go on. So the Harrisburg trial in 72 stateside was the most interesting thing in terms of the anti-war movement that was going on right then. you know, lottery system had been put in at the end, the very end of 69 and 71. So the there was a change in the way people would be drafted, which was very intentional on the part of the government. But nonetheless, things hadn't, they had begun in some ways to slightly quiet down by the time the trial went on. And all eyes were really focused on Harrisburg. And the 40 or so reporters who were there were in some ways the cream of the crop. I'm not speaking of myself, but my colleagues that were sitting all around me were some of the most famous reporters in American journalism at the time.
We're going to take some phone calls, talk a little more about the Harrisburg Seven and the New Catholic Left in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Willow Valley Communities recognizes the need for a national conversation about the Vietnam War and is proud to support the efforts to preserve the memories of those who lived through it. More information is available at willowvalleycommunities.org. The law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein, and Lehr, who are proud to partner with WITF in preserving our history to enable future generations to explore the past, understand the present, and create the future. Saul Ewing is online at saul.com.